You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Helen Simonson's debut novel, Major Pettigrew's Last Stand, is oh so British. The Major, a proper country gentleman, is so profoundly affected by the unexpected death of his younger brother that he's jolted out of his routine and finds himself taking a passionate and uncharacteristic chance to find love. The book is published by Random House, and I'm so happy it brings Helen Simonson here today. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
I said it's oh so British. You were born in England, but haven't you lived here for many, many years?
Yes, I've been in the U.S. for 23 years, and for almost all of that time, I've been a New Yorker.
P.G. Wodehouse wrote most of his very British fictions while he was living on Long Island. So do British writers become more British after they move here?
I think we do. We develop first an interest in placemats with hunting scenes and tins of biscuits with the Queen on them. And there's certainly a sense of nostalgia and also, I think, a sense of distance that allows us to have a perspective that it's difficult to have when you're in the middle of something.
Have you been writing all along?
I have not. I was a busy advertising executive, and then I was a stay-at-home mom for more than a dozen years. And during that time, I was looking for some kind of creative or intellectual outlet, because being a stay-at-home mom is a 24-hour white-collar and blue-collar job, mostly blue-collar, and you need to continue some kind of life of the mind. So.
But this does seem like an unlikely book for someone like you to have written. The central character, Major Pettigrew, is definitely of another time. And the Times Review called this a much-loved but faded literary genre.
Yes, I think that what I wanted to do was take the English village, which is a somewhat stereotype genre, and shake it up. I think that actually the English particularly are about the last group on earth that nobody has any difficulty making fun of, and that leads to
including us, the British.
Including the British. We're good at making fun of ourselves. But it means that we're often very, very stereotyped. So my plan was to create a retired major and stick him in a rose-colored covered cottage in England and then kind of try to blow the whole thing up.
And the cottage is in the English countryside, a small village called Edgecombe St. Mary.
Yes.
Is there such a place?
There is not. This is an imagined village made out of my recollections of several such places. But I am very drawn to that part of England, to the countryside. And even though I've been away 23 years, that's right behind my eyes every day.
Well, you talked about yourself as a New Yorker for much of your life, but in England, you didn't live in London or any of the other major cities.
Well, actually, I was at the London School of Economics for 3 years, so I love London. I spent a lot of time going to the theater. You could get half-price tickets, living in almost a squat in Islington and struggling to learn economics and politics. So I do have experience of living in an urban environment.
And you didn't apply any of that? I mean, here you go to London School of Economics and you write this book.
I think the country exerts a spell on me, even here in the States, too. It's the landscapes outside of the cities that I really cherish. I had a chance to go out west a couple of times. I've been to Colorado. I've been to Wyoming. I could sit on a rock and look all day at the mountains. So I love living in cities. That's where I prefer to live. But I like to get outside of them and really take in landscape.
The object of Major Pettigrew's affection is Mrs. Ali, the Pakistani shopkeeper, and this is thought to be inappropriate both in his social sphere and in hers. Now, have the British gotten past calling anyone from Southern Asia a Paki?
In my experience, and it's only the experience of one person, largely not. But I believe Prince Harry recently defended himself by saying it's a term of endearment and nobody objects. I'm not quite sure that's true. But certainly when I was growing up in England, that was still the case.
Would it be typical for a family like the Alis not to seek to be incorporated into the community? Is assimilation still resisted?
I believe it is, and it may not actually be an issue of color. It may actually be more an issue of class. They are, after all, in trade. And that lingers, too, in terms of who mixes with who.
But also, there's the religious factor. Mrs. Ali's nephew is more religious than she, and I had the impression that it would be difficult for him to practice the religion in this community.
Yes, I think in order to go to mosque, he has to go to a town about 12 miles away. I think that would be very usual in England. The other thing in England, we should be able to get along, because the way we do it in England is nobody actually talks about religion. But I think when you see a young Muslim man coming down the street, that religious question is right there in front of your eyes.
When the Beatles came along, many people in England asked if that would change British attitudes about class, and that's when the 7-Up series was developed.
And what's
come out of the 7-Up series is that class remains a key component of British life.
Well, I think the overt barriers have slipped away. It now is possible to come from state comprehensive school and go to Oxford and Cambridge. But what's taken longer, I think, is the very insidious barriers that you don't even consider. And I would include myself in that. I think one of the reasons that it took me until I was almost 40 to even consider writing was a feeling that I wasn't qualified. I wasn't made to write. I didn't come from the right background. I didn't have a degree in English from Oxford University. And I didn't realize that that was hampering my life until I met a young man in ballroom dancing class where my husband and I were attempting the tango. And I asked him what he was doing for his summer vacation. And he said he was staying home to write his screenplay. And I looked at him and I thought, but you're an accountant. And I realized that I was hampered by the vision of who I was as an advertising person and a stay-at-home mom, and that I wasn't entitled to write. And I went home and I thought, gosh darn, this is America. Everyone's allowed a dollar and a dream. And so it was actually America that allowed me to write.
Although most people then start writing a book based on their own lives and not on someone like Major Pettigrew.
Well, if I wrote a book about my own life, it would probably be very short and not very interesting. I consider myself a very lucky and very happy person, but a happy life doesn't necessarily make good reading.
Is it fair to say that the American characters in this novel don't come off very well?
Thank you, Leonard.
Well, have any of your American friends taken you to task for a certain caricature?
Well, I wish to claim that having lived here 23 years, I've earned the right to poke a little fun at my friends. And that's I consider Americans my friends. And I tried in this novel to find somewhere the redeeming character in everybody. But I did have enormous fun letting my Americans loose in this little village.
Yeah, at one point the town is threatened with development, the brainchild of an American.
Yes, but what's funny about that is he's actually planning this somewhat beautiful concept. We would love it, which is to not spoil the village with a lot of development, but merely put up 5, 6, or maybe 9 strategically placed manor houses that are exact copies of the manor house there, and then have all the right kind of people who drive the right kind of car and who are interested in the right kind of values come and live there. And what was so fun about that is at least 15% of me thought, ooh, that would be nice to live there.
Do any of the townspeople actually own their own homes in a town like this?
Yes. I do think in England we're not living in feudal villages anymore.
There's not a large estate like there used to
be with
the manor house.
Yes. I would say that most of the large estates in England have ended up selling off their cottages. They either keep them as holiday cottages, or they've sold them off. There's not a lot of labor that gets a cottage anymore.
One of my favorite characters in the book, or should I say two of my favorite characters almost from the first page, I couldn't wait to find out what happened to them, were the pair of Churchills.
Oh,
can you explain what
guns.
Churchills are?
Yes, Churchill is actually a real brand of sporting gun. And what I like about the Churchills is that they're not quite as famous a brand as perhaps another brand in England. So that fits with my whole theme of slight self-deprecation at all times. And they're very, very fine sporting guns. And the Major's father, on his deathbed, gave one to the Major and one to his younger son, Bertie.
But why are two necessary? It's very important to keep them together.
Well, it's like collecting anything else. You want the doll in the box that's never been opened, and with shotguns, they usually come as a pair, and this was presented by a grateful Maharaja for an act of bravery, and so their value lies in the pair in the presentation box.
There is this whole matter of inheritance here. I don't know whether the concept of primogeniture still survives in England, but you get the feeling that even if it isn't the law, it is something that is still done in practice.
Well, it's certainly something that I would probably politically be very much against, especially being a woman. I was very taken with the story of Vita Sackville West, who was a writer and has a famous garden. And she grew up in a beautiful manor house in Kent, and her brother got it. And she had to move out and make her own way in the world. And she never got over missing the house she grew up in. But in the case of the major, as I was writing it, I found myself struggling with the concept, because there's also the concept of stewardship. And as the major says, if you keep dividing things every generation and selling them off, then what is left of your history?
Major Pettigrew and Mrs. Ali have literature in common, a wonderful thing to share. But Rudyard Kipling?
Okay, well, that was probably a bit naughty on my part, having Mrs. Ali turn out to be a closet fan of Rudyard Kipling.
And Gunga Din, better man though he may be.
Well, I have to say, yes, that poem is very frowned on these days, but I was forced to learn it and recite it at probably about age 11, and I took it at its face value at the time, and I have never forgot that you are a better man than I am, Gunga Din. But I think at one point she says, as you grow older, you grow less politically rigid and you do things you want to do. So you know what? If you want to go out and read Kim, which happens to be an incredibly modern, open, welcoming book that embraces all kinds of religion and people, go ahead and read it. So I admire her for that.
Well, both Mrs. Ali and Major Pettigrew do share also a disenchantment with the next generation.
Yes, the major's son is a banker in London. And
almost a Thatcherite.
Almost
American, in fact.
Almost. I think that he's kind of pursuing, arrogant young men in the city are kind of pursuing and would like to be Wall Street types. Though I have some compassion for Roger, too, because to do that, you need a lot of money. If you come from the right background, it still helps. And he struggles somewhat because his father is this small retired major in a small village in the middle of nowhere. And Mrs. Ali is struggling with a nephew who was sent away to Pakistan to study and came back much more religious, much more fundamental, and he's looking to take over her shop, and she's supposed to retire and become invisible within the family. And so I tried to set those up as problems for both of them.
If this book had been written 30 years ago, wouldn't there have been a murder somewhere along the
line? I have to say the time I considered a murder was I finished an 8-week workshop in the comic novel out at Stony Brook, Southampton, and my professor, Bob Reeves, loved this book so much, there were only 8 chapters at the time, that he stood up and gave the class a lecture on how comedies of social manners must end with a wedding. And then he looked down the room at me. So at that point, I considered killing the major off. But I'm not sure that it would have risen to the level of violence. I actually think we've gotten more violent in our literature in more contemporary fashion.
And I'm assuming once this book has been published, you're working on another one.
I am working on another one, and I had a great feeling when my agent said she would take me on. I stepped out into the busy streets of Soho, and everyone flowed around me. And for a moment, I thought, I'm a real writer, and my entire second novel kind of presented itself in my head in glowing colors. Of course, that feeling has passed, and now I'm battling the empty pages again. But I am indeed hoping that I know what I'm doing second time around.
Helen Simonson's first time around is Major Pettigrew's Last Stand. It is published by Random House. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.